With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Mother's Day is just around the corner, and it's time to pamper the special moms in your life. And what better way than with Osea's limited edition skincare sets featuring clean, vegan, cruelty-free products that are safe for your skin and the planet. Osea is a women-founded, women-led brand that's been making seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. This Mother's Day, Osea has two limited edition sets, perfect for gifting or keeping for yourself. Their Golden Glow body set includes three clinically proven bestsellers for silky, smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set has everything she needs to achieve spa-level results at home. They're so beautiful, you can skip the wrapping. For a limited time, you can save up to $48 on Osea sets, plus get free shipping. That's Mother's Day made easy. Pamper the moms in your life and get 10% off your first order site-wide with code MOM at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com, code MOM.
Hello and welcome to day two of Guitar Nerd's Gear of the Year deliberations. I'm your host Mark Packham, joined by Matt Knight.
Good evening.
Jay Cross.
Hello.
And Joe Branton.
Shalom.
I would normally say thanks for joining us this evening, but it's actually, what, 1 o'clock or something?
Yeah, half one.
Not spoiling the illusion, but we're recording all of Gear of the Year on one day.
Oh my. I think it's better that way. I think it's much better
as well.
That way.
I definitely
would think that it's better that way.
Yes. What? But what do you mean?
If I wasn't really hungover.
Oh, yeah, that is
no,
true.
You,
yeah.
What, you're just hungover or just thinking about what's going to win?
You'd be so hard. Even if we did it over 2 days, you'd be hungover on both days. That's how it works. Joe Branton.
When are you ever sober?
So, yesterday we put through the Billy Corgan by Reverend, the Gretsch Streamliner Double Cut, the Rockstock Bright Switch and Barefoot Buttons through to Friday's final in the Best Guitar and Best Accessories categories. Today we're talking Best Amplifier and 2016's Gear of 2015.
Yeah.
Our amazing time traveling category. So let's kick things off with Best Amplifier. I'll read out what's on the list and we can say yes or no to each of them. So Line 6 Firehawk, PV6505 Piranha, Boss Blues Cube Hot, Marshall Code, Vox AC30 Head, Supro Supreme 6v6, the Fender Bassbreaker 15, the DV Mark Gen 15, and the Honey Boy 5 Watt. Some interesting stuff there, bouncing from super loud digital stuff to super quiet valve stuff and everywhere in between. Does anyone want to make an argument for or against anything on this list?
I mean, whether it's a top five product or not, but a company that's generally overlooked for guitar amps, I think make great sounding amps. DV Mark.
Yes, 100%.
Do you remember, I mean, this is like an older product, and I think they've always carried on. They did, I'm assuming this is the second version from the little portable lunchbox head they did a while. No, the Galileo.
The Galileo, yeah.
The 15, which was amazing. Loads of clean headroom, basically didn't distort.
Yep.
This is only 15 watts.
This is a different thing. So this is basically like a Fender style 15 watt head that is valve pre and like a digital output stage, I believe. Although you might just want to confirm that because it might both be valve. But it's small, super lightweight, really simple. I hadn't heard of this. I didn't hear about this coming out.
Class A is all tube.
Yeah, yeah. And Jay and I went down to the guitar shop and plugged it in. And this sounds absolutely phenomenal.
I'm not surprised. Because I generally really love all the DV Mark stuff. And I just think that it's not a brand that people... They've got a great background in obviously what they do in bass amps, and everyone knows them for that, but you are basically starting from the ground up when you start. So you've got the technology and the resources to build the amps. It's just that you've actually got to try and get it in people's guitar rigs. Ever since the Galileo, every time I've plugged one of them in, I just think great, because it's got the clean headroom, and that's what I want. I don't necessarily want something that drives a lot. I want something that's a great pedal platform and really clean.
And
they're well built. I mean, this is the thing. The Mark Bass stuff, I mean, in the entire time that we've all probably worked in guitar stores, I think I saw one Mark bass amp ever come back broken. It's because there was an electrical fault in the venue that blew up the amp. So it was like,
I think the returns rate is like 0.02% or something like that.
They are so well built. But I completely love this product, and it's really nice that DV Mark.
You're not allowed to say nice stuff about Mark Bass.
I know, but I actually really like their guitar stuff, and this one more importantly because they've actually bothered in the way that it looks. I think their digital rack heads that they've done for a while. They recently released a signature model version of the rack head. I can't remember who for, but that sounds incredible. And I just think for clean headroom, they are a brilliant company that, exactly as Matt said, get completely overlooked. I'm looking at their page on their website for this product at the moment.
Yeah.
The only thing I don't like is that they've got, you know, they've got the amp there, all these great features, and the one that they choose to make the first feature is the weight. I just don't care.
I know you don't.
It concerns me when a company who make things that make sound are more concerned about how much it weighs. It makes me scared that it's only luck that they actually make good sounding products, because it's not their number one concern. If they had a choice between a component that was heavier that made it sound better than a lighter product, they would go for the lighter product.
I don't think that's necessarily true, because they could have made this all digital, whereas, you know, it's two ECC83s and then two EL84s and one ECC83 in the output stage. So
yeah, fair point.
I think they've gone for
the other thing, and John, maybe this is something you don't know a huge amount about, because this is something to do with marketing, is companies have to stand out from each other. And
Joe,
you know,
I'm going to say a term to you now. Now, this is going to go over your head, but USP?
Yes. I don't know if you know anything about this. It's an area of marketing that you maybe aren't familiar with, marketing manager. But anyway, that's why these companies, you know, they've got to stand out somehow. And, you know, DV Mark is a company that, you know, we know who they are and we love them. And, you know, bass players will know. Well, actually, you know, people might not know this is the same people that do Mark Bass.
Yeah, they don't make it very clear.
They don't make it very clear. They keep them very, very separate. And I think it's very weird. I mean, I'm glad that they haven't called this company Mark Guitar.
Yeah, that would be dreadful.
It would be absolutely atrocious. But the thing is what they've done here is they've made a Fender-style amp head.
That sounds very close to Fender.
That sounds really good, with built-in reverb. And, you know, most people are going to just pass this off unless they have a reason to look at it. And if the reason to look at it is the fact that it weighs less than 6 kilos, then if that's what turns people onto this, then brilliant. Absolutely quality.
I'm not that fussed. It is just a great product.
Yeah, I mean, actually, if you go on their website and you look at the products they've got now, actually, the one that I think is almost even better, which was something that I asked for years ago when they first bought the little jazz amps, was the Micro 50.
Yeah.
Making these little solid state portable amp heads with headphone output for using live. But I think, you know, they do. I think their biggest problem is just getting it in the hands of players.
Yeah, definitely.
I think that's, unfortunately, that's, I think, just what they've got to work on. But in terms of a guitar amp, fantastic bit of kit.
I think they're a great company. Like the little jazz amps are astonishing.
Yeah, yeah,
absolutely astonishing. You know, they make some kind of weird stuff as well. Like the DV40s, I think, are a bit weird.
Real, like, they look like a bass amp.
Yeah, they do. And I'm not really sure what it is that they're trying to do with something like that, but. Like, I think they make some really great stuff, and I think that this the Gen 15 is like really is a standout product.
Joe Branton, is there anything on this list that you want to stand behind?
Well, I actually think that's probably the best product. On
okay,
this list,
well there we go.
Start,
well, number one on the list.
I mean, obviously, I mean, I figured Matt would probably want to talk about the Honey Boy 5-watt. Mm-hmm. I think that is another really strong contender on here. There are a few non-starters, I think, on here as well. I mean, actually, if we're going to speak about stuff to get behind, I think the Blues Cube Hot is a perfect product. A lot like, I think the DV Mark Gen 15 is a really astute product. It's exactly what the market wants.
Yep.
It's exactly the direction that amps are going in. And I think that the Boss Blues Cube Hot...
Roland
Blues Cube Hot is...
Sorry, that's my fault for listening incorrectly.
Yeah. The Blues Cube Hot is... the same. Is just a completely on the money, and it got rid of the things I didn't like about the Blues Cube.
Yep.
See, I think that that's interesting, because I actually don't think that that's the best amp that Roland have done this year. I think that this should be the Katana. Right. I think the Katana is a... If you're standing the two side by side, and, you know, we did that initially, because we were sent one of each... for demo purposes, and I like Mark and I did like an unboxing, and we tried them both. And first impressions, I thought the Blues Cube was great. I really did think the Blues Cube was great. And then I plugged in the Katana, and I was a bit underwhelmed. But I was only underwhelmed until I like started paying a bit more attention to what was going on with the amps. And I honestly didn't realize how cheap the Katana was. Yeah. And I think that and like so and I'm I am I realized we've got to take a step back, because the Katana isn't on this list, the Blues Cube Hot is on the list, but...
Well, we can change that. That's open for debate.
See, I don't think that... I think the Katana is a better amp than the Blues Cube Hot.
Did we change it purely because of what comes up later in...
No,
not at all. I changed it because it's... I mean, effectively, I know they're different brands, but we wanted to...
I think it should stay on there.
I mean, you know, I personally don't want to get too involved, because I don't want, you know, people to kind of think we're swearing one way or the other. But I think if you were going to pick an amp in terms of price, versatility and sound, I think the Katana would probably be better.
Yeah, so I am concerned about the Katana being on this list, because I want the DV Mark to win.
Well, I think I've
changed it now.
I really think we should stick with the Blues Cube, okay, because I think it's worth talking about.
Yeah, 100%.
I do really think it's worth talking about.
I suppose we've always got a chance to talk about it later.
You've got the choice, Katana or Blues Cube.
I think the Blues Cube should be on there.
Joe Branton?
Both, top two. Just saying.
The Katana is on the listener's choice, so the Katana has a shot of getting in here anyway.
Well, no, because it didn't necessarily make the top two in listener's choice.
Okay. There we go.
So do we want Katana 50 or do we want Blues Cube Hot in the best amp category?
Oh, that's really tough.
I mean, I'm just putting it out there. I think for the money, £165 for the 50 watt Katana.
I'm saying Katana. From the two demos that we did, I think the Katana sounded better.
One product I'm not sure I can fully get behind.
Okay.
6505 Piranha.
I knew you were going to say that, and
I haven't watched the demo yet.
I'm going to counter this, because in the room, I thought it sounded pretty poor. And we'd, you know, granted, we'd had both of those two Roland
amps. We'd
done
a lot of demos that day.
And we'd done the Honey Boy 5, which sounded great. And then we plugged the Piranha in, it was like, oh, it sounds a bit naff, but then it's £100 tiny little amp. And I listened back, and editing the demo, I was like, this actually sounds really nice. This didn't sound like this in the room at all. I thought it sounded pretty pony, but on the demo it sounds great. And I realise the demo hasn't gone live yet, so it's hard to judge, or it might have done by the time this podcast comes out actually, but I thought it sounded pretty good. I'm not sure it's a top 5 product.
Does it need to exist though, in a way? Like,
well, it's...
Does it? Because it doesn't have some of the modern features that other mini amps have.
There's no USB.
True, but it's not. It's also not going for that market. I think it's going for...
Is it not? I thought that's probably what it was trying to go for.
No, I think it's more going for like Mike Orange Micro Terror. You know, they're novelty products, I think. And it's good. I mean, I would say that it deserves its place on this list over something like the Line 6 Firehawk, for example.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure it's a top 5 product. Is there anything on this list that we think doesn't deserve to be on there?
Can I address the elephant in the room here?
Yes.
I'm going to go out and say it, because I think that there's a slight conflict of interest for Matt, and I think that it's probably best that Joe doesn't get involved in this discussion. The Marshall Code. Okay. The Marshall Code, this is gear of the year 2016. If we were doing this podcast...
4 years ago.
If we were doing this podcast in 2009... and the Fender Mustang amps hadn't come out, I think that the Code would be in with a good shot. The problem is Marshall have taken so long to catch up to what their competitors were doing like over 5 years ago. That this is, it's just a, it's ridiculous. Honestly, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
The code, I would go as far as to say I think the code is the worst product to come out this year. I think it was
Joe Branton,
so
2016.
Far, so far from the mark of what, of where everyone is going. It's like, I don't know, because Marshall are obviously paying people to do research into what people want.
Sure.
And I don't understand
this is
how
what
it
they
came out.
This is what they released. That's unforgivable. And we shouldn't be pulling punches with it. It's okay. A joke that's what they've taken this long to release.
It just, like, it genuinely breaks my heart because I love Marshall. I love Marshall. They are genuinely one of my favourite companies of all time. And the fact that they just keep getting it wrong with their practice amps, it's ridiculous. They're not good enough.
What do they do though? That's the thing. We talk about Marshall all the time. We say, you know, they've got the heritage, they've potentially got, you know, a load of legacy models, and I think we could do a whole podcast on this. Like, how would you, if you suddenly took over Marshall tomorrow, what would you do to make Marshall great again? Sorry.
More phones. Get people connected.
Like, yeah. they've tried doing the high-end reissues. You know, they did the Silver Jubilee reissue. They do, you know, Blues Breakers and stuff. They're not mass market products. And I think even the stuff that they aimed at the mass market, you know, the Silver Jubilee stuff, didn't really hit. Even though they were great products. On the mid-range stuff, you know, they still sell loads of JVMs. They still sell
loads,
you know,
of DSLs.
The DSLs and stuff. Yeah. So there's not really a problem there. The practice amps, like, they kind of have to do a digital practice amp. I mean, I know that these aren't up to the standard. I don't think they're anywhere near the standard of, say, Katana.
Yeah.
I think they're better probably than the Spider 5s that have just come out.
Yeah, like, I agree with that.
I think they're kind of on par with the Mustangs, like you say, like the old Mustangs.
Yeah, but like I say, the Mustangs came out in 2009.
But what else you do, though? That's the thing. And I'm not defending code because I don't think it's as good as it should be. But if I was going to take over Marshall today, I think that's the hardest job in the whole industry.
I'd do exactly what Fender did, which was make something that, but when you get down to practice size, actually, I don't think the sound is kind of the most important thing. I think it is to an extent, but making something that's it's gonna have a permanent place in a home, and so I think the aesthetic of it becomes the most important.
Look at the list.
Managed to make their amps look really retro,
but
and cool. And
the code's cut apart from the top
code
panel.
It looks like a hi-fi. If they just did like a combo that looked a bit like a Jubilee or a combo that looked like a 1974 but was solid state and had a few effects on it, that's all.
But
they
that's
didn't
what
need to reinvent
for years.
The wheel.
They did the MGs.
Yeah, but they weren't good enough.
Yeah, but I
so
don't
make
know.
A better one. Like, what they should have done, what they should have done is what Orange did. 3 years ago, whatever, with the when they did the Crush Pro series, when they went, you know what, people don't really need the built-in effects.
Sure,
they don't really need these. What they want is a good, like bass tone. They need like a good tone that sounds good at low levels to build up from.
But bear in mind Marshall's market. Marshall, if say a kid comes in, young kid with their parents, they've got two options. They've got the solid state Orange stuff, or they've got Marshall that's got effects on it for about the same money. Parents will know Marshall. They won't necessarily know Orange, and they'll say, okay, that one's got more stuff in it for the same money, I'll take that. So that's essentially what Marshall are doing with the codes.
Yeah.
What I think the problem that Marshall have is that they have to appeal to so many different audiences because of the size of the brand.
Sure.
So they're appealing to you and I, you know, when they're making Silver Jubilees, which we think are probably some of the best amps ever made.
Yeah.
The reissue of that. But they've also got to deal with Little Jimmy's Christmas that is competing, you know, with the real cheap practice amps and stuff like that. And I just think code, for me, sums up Marshall's problem in that it's tried to do a little bit of both. You know, they've tried to go for like super high-end modelling, and they had that tie-in with, who was it? Like someone like IK Multimedia, someone like that, who was working on the models and stuff like that. But it's also got to be a practice amp and affordable, and the code kind of sums up, and it also goes for some way to saying how, because Marshall are so big, they can't be very swift in turning stuff around. You know, like you're saying, this competes with practice amps from 2009. That's probably because they've been trying to do it from, since 2009.
Yeah, I'm sure they have. I'm sure they have.
I think what they've ended up with is an amp that's not great. You know, they're not. I don't think they belong on this list. We should get rid of them. We should ditch them from the top five, 100%. But I think it's a really interesting talking point that they've, and it's happened in other places as well. The MA series, which were a cheap valve amp, essentially.
Yeah. The Hayes series.
Yeah, you know, two ranges that just meant nothing. They were just rubbish. But it was because Marshall are thinking about Lemmy and they're also thinking about Little Jimmy at the same time. They're thinking of rock stars and they're thinking about Little Jimmy's Christmas. And I think that's 100% the hardest job in MI, musical instrument retail at the moment, is if you were the head of Marshall, what do you do with that company? And that's where we've ended up with Code.
I find it so difficult to talk about because, like, I want to like let rip and be like, it's a complete outrage that this has happened, but I agree with you. I don't understand.
Do you have a better solution though?
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, I do. Yeah. And it's
the solution that all the other brands have.
Well, there is two ways to go about it. You like, I think if I was Marshall, what I would be doing is like something like the Orange amps, the Orange Crush Pro series, with a actually what they should be doing is they should have done the Blackstar ID Core series. Yeah. So you've got the ability to have a couple of effects on there if you want them, or you've got the ability to plug it in via USB and like model away to your heart's content.
Yeah.
And like, kids aren't dumb. Like, Little Jimmy will know more about how to put something like this together than Little Jimmy's parents were.
Although, hasn't
and
the
kids
Marshall
aren't
code
stupid. They know how to use these things now.
But Marshall codes, you can do that. You just do it through Bluetooth, right?
Yeah. It's got both. I mean, the Marshall code does exactly
what you're saying. You can just turn everything off. Yeah, what we're saying is, I think really what it comes down to is it does everything that all these other amps do, but the sound isn't there. Fender have, you know, they have Plexi or whatever on their sound setting. Marshall code is all Marshall preamps. Yeah. It's designed to be a Marshall modelling amp.
Yeah.
And I think ultimately at the end of the day, it just, the sound isn't as good as some of the other ones on the market.
Yeah.
I think that's what it comes down to, because it does everything that all the modern ones do. Tons of presets. Marshall Gateway, which I think is their app to kind of do it. You've got MP3 on there, you've got USB for recording. It does all of that. It just don't think the sound is up.
Yeah, I think what this all boils down to is Marshall Code is getting deleted from this list.
Yeah.
Farewell.
Does anyone want to talk about the Line 6 Firehawk? Matt, you've probably got the most experience with this. Talking about loud digital modelling amps, this is the loudest of the lot.
Yeah, it's a weird one, really, because this isn't the first time Line 6 have done something like this. You know, we're talking, you know, the HD147, which we've often talked about, the world's loudest toaster. looks like a toaster, 147 decibels. Totally. I think it's Line 6 going, we can do this, but
should
it's
you?
Everyone, but everyone else is going, but should you?
Yeah.
1500 watts.
Yep.
I mean, look at everything else on this list. Nothing goes above, I mean, Katana's a 50, but you can obviously sweep it down.
That's the loudest amp on this list, 50 watts.
But, you know, it's 1,500 watts. And now, the sound, in terms of, because you've got the big tweeter, you've got the four stereo sub-speakers, and then you've got the one central speaker.
Yep.
So the actual sound is great if you're mixing audio and guitar.
Yep.
But who does that? People who play in their bedroom.
Yeah.
Do people who play in their bedroom want a 1500 watt?
Is the idea behind it that you can kind of use it as like home cinema and you can use it as a guitar?
Yeah,
amp?
Because actually, do you know what? I always thought that the...
Did I just hear that sentence correctly?
Yes. Yeah.
But that's the thing.
It's
I think
1500 watt digital modelling amp. I mean...
But that was the great thing about... what am I thinking of? Not the... the Line 6, the ones before this. Not the Firehawks.
Amplify.
Always sounded great. If you've got an iPad and it's in your room, you've played enough guitar, you're watching some videos, the sound quality for audio and movies and music was fantastic.
When they first came out, we were using them as a stereo, weren't we, in the shop?
But I also think that's part of its downfall, because having an FRFR-style speaker means that you've got no character.
Yeah. And you have to rely on modelling.
And you have to rely on, you know, a speaker is a key part of the way sound comes out of the amp, and obviously the way that the sound changes.
Yep.
And if you've got a completely flat response speaker, that you're basically pumping everything out through something that's got no character.
Yeah.
So it all comes down to digital modelling. And yeah. I just think it's a product that is great, but just didn't need to happen.
I tell you why this product happened is that Line 6 brought out the Helix, which I think is an absolutely phenomenal and like monstrously powerful piece of equipment. It certainly isn't for everyone. I would never use one. Matt maybe would find some use for it somewhere along the line. I don't think the three of us would.
No.
But I understand why they've done it, and I think it's a really important step forward in modelling and in like personal modelling. What they should have done with the Helix technology is gone, we should take this, strip it back a bit, and make a new range of spider amps that sound as good as this but aren't quite as powerful and don't have quite as much, you know, ability to, because we don't want to stop people from buying them.
Yeah.
But they didn't want to do that because they didn't want to stop people from buying the Helix. So they went, we've got all this technology, let's put it in a big amp.
But the Firehawk came out before the Helix, and then the Firehawk also ran concurrently with the Pod HD 500, and I never understood where the Firehawk actually
doesn't the Firehawk 1500 have the tech from Amplify though, rather than the tech from Helix?
Yeah, it has the tech from Amplify.
So it's just a huge amplifier, basically.
Oh, yeah. It doesn't have the Helix tech in it.
No.
Helix is a completely separate thing all on its own. But I was just looking at some of the infographics they've put on. They've put like 22 watt tube amp, and then it's like optimal volume range 0 dB to small venue, and it's like, then it's like 40 watts small venue maybe to medium venue, 100 watt tube amp. When was the last time anyone bought a 100 watt tube amp? Large venue, and then it's like 15 watt stage amp, any tone, any volume. It's not, but I can guarantee you that volume control, they're not as linear as you think.
No.
I mean, you're not really, I mean, 1500 is almost like a statement, because you're not going to feel 1500 watts of power coming out of it. I just think I just think it's an amp that you wouldn't use on stage.
Yeah.
Realistically. I mean, I can't remember what's the price on those.
They are £827 currently.
I just think if you're going to spend £800,
get a Hot Rod Deluxe, which is like unbelievably loud.
Yeah. And it's about, I just think that people, maybe, I don't know, I just think people aren't going to spend that sort of money on something.
What was the previous Line 6? The DT?
Yeah, DT, but the DT was a totally different product.
Yeah, they were fantastic. Yeah, but
I really liked
it. They didn't sell though, did they?
No.
Unfortunately.
Because it's a Line 6 amp, they're never going to sell in the volume that
But they were
Spider.
They were a smart idea nonetheless. I liked the look of them. I liked that they were introducing valves into the mix. They were cool. They were good.
Is everyone comfortable with knocking this Line 6 Firehawk off this list?
I think so.
Okay. Vox AC30 head. Joe Branton, you're a big fan of Vox.
Yeah, I think this is great. They released it as a 15 and a 30, and yeah, I was over the moon because I love Voxes. And I think we spoke about this at the time that they came out. A lot of touring bands don't use combos. So it brought Vox sort of back into the mix for bands that are maybe sort of sharing cabs.
Mid-level bands, I think, is the... my only thing is, does it warrant its place on this list? Because it's just an AC30 with the speakers chopped off.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That is the problem. The other thing, obviously, they are... these are just vintage reissues of when they'd done them previously.
Yep.
If there could have been some sort of advice towards modernising them, it would have been the size.
Well, I actually think that they could have gone further than that. And I don't think, like, if this is supposed to be like a touring amp and like a utilitarian amp, I don't think it needed the four inputs.
Maybe not.
I think that they could have done something a bit smarter with, like,
yeah, they've just rehashed.
They've literally just chopped the speaker.
They just
off.
Lift and the chassis that they already make and put it into a different box.
It's got power scaling. I think that's the only difference, right?
Does it?
But that power scaling's not built into the output. Well, it's not built into the amplifier's design. It's post amp.
Right,
speaker,
okay, fine.
Which sounds like a blown fuse waiting to happen.
They've basically built an attenuator into the box.
Like, I just think if they had offered like different channel, like switchable channels, as opposed to the four inputs. So, like, because I really don't think you need to have the. I think it makes sense, kind of, if you're going down the Vox heritage of having the normal input and the top boost. But I don't think you need the high and low impedance.
No, it's a sort of purist reissue, or just not thought through. And yeah, it would have been great if they'd have done that. Also, I know that we've selected the 30 for this, but they released the 15 in exactly the same chassis, and the chassis is the size of what you see 100 watt heads.
Yeah.
And that is like, oh man, that makes it. There isn't actually all that much advantage in getting one of these instead of
the
combo.
You could probably, I mean, if space wasn't an issue, you could probably buy the combo. If you didn't need the speakers, sell the speakers and have
just carry that. It wouldn't make,
just,
be that much
think,
bigger.
Imagine and if they made a lunchbox Vox head though.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I know,
imagine
how good it would be.
I mean,
they've done
that.
They did the night trains and stuff.
Oh, but they were a different preamp and power design. Totally. They did like a classic AC lunchbox.
That'd be fantastic.
That's what they should have done. And I think that's why, for me, it's not a top five product.
Yeah, I agree. It's not a top five product. I think it's a great product because it's a brilliant amp. But Vox, for me, I sort of have maybe of veering into that sort of Marshall territory, in that I think Vox amps are the best sounding amps in the world, but they're almost successful despite themselves.
They need to modernise it.
Yeah, they're just like every new product. Let's not forget that this year Vox released that guitar, the Star.
Oh God, yeah, the
Star Streamer.
Star Streamer or Screamer, something like that.
I think it was Streamer.
Yeah.
But yeah, which was so far from being a relevant product, it's unbelievable.
We don't do a worst gear of the year category because we generally try and keep this fairly positive. But I'm 95% sure that would win worst product of the year.
Well, that's over the code.
And you see, that's what happens when Vox try and do something new, which is scary. I mean, I have no idea why they don't just always do teardrop guitars and basses, because and like maybe get them well made, guys, and like they would sell like hotcakes as guitars. But yeah, the only time Vox are any good is when they're looking at their heritage.
I think it's just worth as a parting point. So it's not all trashing Vox.
Oh no,
I know, I know, I know. But it's next year, 2017, is the 70th anniversary of Vox.
It's crazy, man.
So
it's got to be time to do a lunchbox style head, right?
Well, I just think that we'll probably see
a new color of hand wired AC30.
Well, I think we'll see some cool new stuff.
Hopefully, possible gears of the year next year.
I hope so. Oh, yeah, I really do hope so because I mean I love Vox.
Matt Knight, do you want to talk about the Supro Supreme 6v6?
Yeah,
that sounded good. Say again.
Supro Supreme 6v6.
I like it. Nice.
I really like Supro amps. I think it's, if I remember right, it's Dave Coltai from Pigtronics bought Supro.
Yes.
And he was like, these amps are amazing. They've got great like American history. Like, we should bring them back. We should redesign them. And yeah, I mean, they are just amazing vintage sounding amplifiers. They don't sound like a modern amp. They sound like you've gone and bought an amp from 1959, 1960. Nice spec, two channels, 25 watts, 110, 6V6s.
Probably the coolest. By far, the coolest looking.
A country mile, that Tolex.
Phenomenal.
Yeah, and
but
actually,
I actually meant that specifically the shape on this one.
Yeah, because isn't it like stepped, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
The back of it is
slightly where they've obviously small. Like put
like,
the
like the way old TVs used to be.
But then I love the way the panel looks. I love the simplicity of the controls, and I like the price. I think that's like $1,150. I think for that, and yeah, I just think. It goes to show that sometimes you don't have to be pushing out all the modern features to get something that's really classy.
They do an extension cab for this as well.
Because I don't know where these are made. I'm assuming they're Far Eastern for that price.
Yeah.
It says assembled in NY. I don't know. I don't know if they're, because I don't think they're ham wide. I'm pretty sure they've got to be populated circuit boards. They must be circuit board for that price. I don't think you could ham wire an amp for that sort of
thing. Such a good looking design, isn't it? Like that strip that runs around the top, just fantastic. Yeah.
And I think this is the thing, is, you know, we said a similar thing with Honey Boy, is the fact that technology in terms of the components that go in amps are better, so these amps are now more reliable. And I suppose one of the only things that you're not getting, if you buy a vintage amp, what you're getting, if it's got an original speaker in it, is hundreds and hundreds of hours of playing wear.
Yep.
And that's the only thing you don't get on a more modern speaker.
Yeah, yeah.
But apart from that, in terms of what's inside, you are getting a better amp than you would if you bought a vintage one. And I think I'd never buy like a vintage amp like that, because I just don't think the reliability is there. And with something like this, you've got more modern reliability as well.
My only question about this is there something better on this list that does this job nicer?
Well, this is the thing. If we're talking about vintage amps and we're talking about value for money at the same time, we can't deny that the Honey Boy 5 was an incredible product.
Absolutely unbelievable. Unrivaled. Like, completely unrivaled.
Yep.
Imagine doing something like that, point-to-point, custom finishes, for less than £700. There is no one
else. It's the crazy price.
I inquire.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I heard about, there was a company in Canada that like build pedal boards, and I inquired about their price, and I inquired about some other people that build pedal boards, and I rebuilt mine last night, and it took about, it's over 2 days, it took about 10 hours, and I was like, if I charge someone for that, £50 an hour, that's like £500.
Yeah.
You think he's hand wiring these amps and making the cabs and Tolexing them to your spec and delivering them for under £700.
It's bonkers.
I can't understand how he's actually making any money.
No.
You know, and I think that's part of it. I know price isn't the be all and end all factor, but I mean, what a crazy bit of kit for that money.
Yeah. It's not the cleanest sounding amp in the world. My only reservation about the Honey Boys is that they're not the cleanest sounding amp in the world. They do break up quite quickly, but...
Well, the 5-watt does. If you're looking at
5-watt Princeton...
Is it an 18?
There's an 18-watt version, which we've not actually heard. But yeah, they... I just think it was absolutely phenomenal. The build quality is better than anything I've seen for years.
It's so loud for 5 watts.
Yeah.
And still, like, that drive was still very, very usable.
And it's coming back to that, you know, take a vintage design... What modern components can I use to kind of improve it?
And, you know, modern manufacturing and stuff. You know, I say it's not... It's very clean point to point, you know, very clean, nice wiring. So it's modern in that, you know, he's keeping it very clean and stuff, but it's an old style of building amps. Yeah. So.
But the only thing I would say is obviously, as people who listen to this podcast regularly know, that we talk about kind of pedals and pedal platforms and things like that. And this is really an amp for, like... the traditional purist, I think.
Yeah.
You wouldn't buy this amp if you wanted to run a lot of pedals or
anything like that. You could probably get away with it if you were, like, low volume at home, but, like, the amp does break up really quickly.
Yeah, but I don't think with these sort of amps, you don't necessarily get the best out of it if you are running it.
Sure.
Fairly low.
Yeah, oh, yeah, this is one to be, like, turned up. Like, you could use it at home. It's 5 watts valve, sort of usable, but really... The idea is that you're in a raucous rock and roll band and you want to be pushing this at like 6 or 7 o'clock six or seven on the dial. That would just sounds so like warm and rich, and it's like just raging, you know.
Yeah. So many nice choices. It's an awesome bit of kit.
Because they fall into a similar kind of product category, how do we feel about the Honey Boy staying and the Supro going?
I think so.
Wait. How many? We've got six left.
We've got six at the moment. The only one we haven't talked about is the Fender Bass Breaker 15.
I'm uncomfortable with the Piranha staying and the Supro going.
Okay.
I would say we lose the Piranha, and then I would say that is a top five that's accurate. Like, that, those probably are the best five amplifiers.
We should probably hear an argument for the Bass Breaker 15.
Yeah.
Who's had the most experience with these? Matt, probably.
Yeah, I mean, I've played them a lot. And I think the great thing about the Bass Breaker was it was Fender doing a non-Fender amplifier.
Yeah.
And that's a huge risk. I suppose in a way that's sort of like Marshall going, oh, we're going to make this real like Fendery sounding clean amp, you know. And they you know, they didn't specifically.
You mean like the Astoria kind? Well, not really.
No.
The Astoria goes the other way. It's like a sort of American high gain.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah.
I think really,
but, like, risk taking is what I mean.
Yeah. I think it was a risk, and it's a risk that paid off. Especially for me, actually, the best one was the 1830.
Okay.
Because I think there was a lot of other competition around the 15, and I think the price now, I think they're expensive for what they are, but they were a great sounding amp for someone who wanted more drive.
Would you be more comfortable with the 1830 being on this list?
I think that's a better amp if we're talking about the Bass Breaker series.
Okay. But going the other way, I actually think that the 7.
The 007.
I think that's the cooler product out of
I thought that it was also like the best in terms of if you're looking for something that's a little bit unique.
Yeah.
You know, because there are very few, you know, I realise that we're just here talking about the Honey Boy 5, but there are very few full tube amps with proper a full range of controls.
Yeah, I mean, the market leader for ages has been the Marshall Class 5.
Which was great, the last good product that Marshall made.
And are we saying that the Bass Breaker 007 is better than a Class 5?
I think so. Yeah, I'd say I think it is.
On par. I think the Class 5 is really good.
It is. I think the 007 drives nicer. And that's the thing, if you want a small amp and you're, say, comparing Bass Breaker 7 to Honey Boy 5, I'd rather have the Bass Breaker, because it will clean up nicer with the volume control, and it's got a tighter gain structure, which I think is nicer for the rockier stuff. And I think you have to be a real vintage player to really get the best enjoyment from the Honey Boy 5.
I completely agree. I think that the I think the Honey Boy is unrivaled on this list if you're thinking about something vibey and thinking about something cool. You know, if you want something with a ton of character, and, you know, these are being built by one person.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that.
But also game changing, like.
Completely. Well, maybe not game changing, but, like, you know.
The price point is the big selling point, I think,
absolutely,
for the Honey Boy 5. It's so good,
you know,
for £700.
I think that for me, the Bass Breaker 007 is a better sounding amp.
Yeah,
in
I
terms
agree.
Of, like, you know, the thing you've got to remember is, like, Honey Boy. It's quite funny, because, like, a lot of these amps were, you know, you think about like an AC30 to begin, for example. The AC30 was designed as an accordion amp.
Yeah.
And then guitar players went, oh, actually, you know what?
Sounds real good.
That sounds good. The Honey Boy was designed initially, he wanted something to amplify his harmonica.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so he like built this thing, and then all of a sudden went, actually, I bet this should sound good with guitar. And, you know, it's kind of going like, all of this has happened before, and all of this will happen again.
I think the Bass Breaker 7 sounds better than the Honey Boy 5, but the Honey Boy 5 sounds better than the Supro.
I really don't want us to come out of this without the Honey Boy on top.
Well, it sounds like we're getting down to the final five argument stage. Is there something on this list that we can ditch? Because we've got six at the moment.
The Piranha.
I think I'd probably say the Piranha.
J-Cross?
Because I think realistically you'd buy Micro Terror.
I don't think you would. I think for me, like, I've never quite clicked with Supro. I just think they are a little bit too simple in terms of their uses. I think that it's like, because how much is that? What's that, £1,500?
No, £1,200.
£1,200, okay. I mean, I just, for, like, I really want to like Supro, because I love the look of them. I love the fact that they've been brought back from the dead. You know, the company didn't exist for however many years, and yeah. I think it's great that someone took a chance on it and has brought the company back to life. I really do think that the amps for me just like they're not quite there. Like I sort of hold a lot of the Supro stuff in the same regard as I would like a Selma treble and bass. You know, I think they're cool. I think there's a ton of character there, but I'm probably not going to buy one.
Yeah.
So that for me, and like I think that on out of the ones that we've got left there, so the PV6505 Piranha, the Boss Katana, the Supro, the Bassbreaker 007, the DV Mark Gen 15, and the Honey Boy, for me, I think the one with the least USP is the Supro. Like I'm not going to buy 6505 Piranha. My reservations are similar to what you said earlier in that it doesn't have some of the modern features that you would expect it to have. Like I think for the 6505 to top this list, it would have needed to have USB out.
Well, yeah. We remember a couple of years ago we were talking about the Ironheart.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And totally. I still think I think the Ironheart Studio is one of the best amps to.
Yeah, this is, but this is a lot less money than that. You know, they're like around 100.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
So I think that for me the two weakest. I don't really like using that phrase because these are all great amps, but I think for me the two weakest are the Supro and the PV, and I think just in comparison to the other things that are on that list. I think that the 6505 should stay just as a... Because I think the Supro, you know, if you were to compare the Supro to the Bassbreaker, the Gen 15, and the Honey Boy, are you really going to... Is that the one that you're going to take away?
I think, agree. I just think it's better than the
I suppose
the
you say...
Yeah,
but. It is, but it's also a completely different product. So yeah. I think the reason we should keep the PV and knock the Supro off is that... The Supro has got a lot of competition outside of this list. You know, products that weren't released this year. Small, 25, 30 watt, nice, vintagey valve combos. There's a lot out there. The PV6505, its competition, I would say, is the Orange Microterra. And I think it's quite a bit better than a Microterra.
Agreed.
When you actually listen to it back again.
Right.
Like I said, in the room, I don't think it sounded fantastic. But you hear it recorded, it sounds awesome. It's got, you know, two classic PV sounds in it. It's got the rhythm and the crunch and lead channels from a 6505. Yes, I would really have liked there to be USB recording, but I still think for its product category outside of this list, I think 6505 is one of the best things you can buy. You know, £100 to £150 micro heads. It's really, really good. It's really strong. Whereas I think the Supro is a great product, and in this list, you know, it sits pretty well. But I don't know. I like the character and stuff. I really like the sound of the amp. I like the vintage build. I think the 6505 should stay.
Yeah, I'll go with that.
Okay, fine. So how about we say that our top five is... the Honey Boy 5 watt, the DV Mark Gen 15, the Fender Bassbreaker 007, the Boss Katana 50, and the 6505 Piranha.
Yeah, okay. Cool.
I think straight away we can put the Piranha in 5.
Yep.
In 5th position.
Everyone happy with that?
Yeah.
Cool. In 4, what are we going to go for? I suspect...
This is a tough one.
The DV Mark
tough.
Gen 15
absolutely
might
not,
be...
Absolutely not. The Bassbreaker 007.
No,
come on,
the DV
Mark is so much...
I think we should go the other way and do a top three.
What's your top? Yeah, okay, Matt. What are your top three products from this list?
We're down to.
No, I mean,
I think you can say the Boss one.
Yeah, no. I think what I was going to say was, I actually had a suggestion for fourth place, which was maybe what not people weren't going to expect.
Okay, go on.
I was going to say the Honey Boy 5. Purely because I think from a commercial point of view, I think if you had it in a guitar store and you had a Bassbreaker 7 and the Honey Boy 5, I think most people would go for the Bassbreaker 7 because I think it has a more commercial sound, which maybe is not a great... in terms of like a great amp for this year, that's amazing. But
I think it depends on your guitar store. If you were in somewhere that's, you know, a big mega store that we're all used to kind of working in, you know, that kind of... You know, where it's a lot of it is about the brands, you know, it's Fender, Gibson, it's Marshall, it's all the name stuff, then probably the Bassbreaker 007 is what people would be drawn towards. But let's say you were somewhere that sells hand-built guitars or boutique stuff.
Yeah.
The Honey Boy 5 is a much better product to sit in that kind of environment. I just think the fact that it's hand-built, the fact that it's point-to-point, you know, it's so different in terms of how it's built from the Bassbreaker.
It's funny, isn't it?
I don't think we can put this fourth on that list.
No,
I absolutely don't think we can.
I think the Honey Boy 5-watt is a product that has the potential to win overall.
It's weird because I'm just thinking, if I walked into a store, what would I... I mean, bizarrely enough, the way if I walked into a store, and what would I buy? Because I really like, if I played it and I know what I want sound and features wise, and I always want a portable guitar head, I really like the DV Mark.
Okay.
Yeah, I think the DV Mark's great.
And no, I definitely put it in my top three.
We have to try and consider sort of like innovation, the vibe, the features, and sort of what it means to the marketplace as well. And I think
it's difficult. I mean, if I was going to pick a top three, I'd probably say, I don't know, I'd definitely take Katana and Bassbreaker, but I'd be struggling to pick between the other two.
Okay. I'd go top three, I'd go Honey Boy, DV, Katana.
J Cross?
I think I would go... It's difficult because they're all fairly different amps, but I think my top three would probably be Katana, Bassbreaker, Honey Boy.
Oh, you'd miss out the DV?
I think so, yeah. Only because... there's not a combo, which I think they're missing a trick with.
There is a combo.
Is there a combo?
Mark. Yeah, there's a...
Okay, right.
There's a 25 or 30. I think it's 30.
Well, okay, there's not 50. Like, again,
oh, no,
maybe
there is a 15 is combo. There is a 15 combo.
I just think, like... I think you would go with... even just those two... Like, just looking at the two heads that you've got there, so the Bassbreaker and the DV Mark, I think that if you were to compare the two, you've got more... you've got more versatility with the Bassbreaker. It doesn't have reverb, which is a bit of a pain. But the DV Mark has only got... It's only a digital reverb. It's not a proper reverb, is it? So, like, that you can kind of discount because, you know, we've all got a reverb pedal. So, whatever. It is really close. It is very close. I think... I'm going the other... Whereas when we were talking about the guitars, I went with head over heart. I think I'm going heart over head here. And I want the Honey Boy to do well because I think it's a great company and a great amp, but that's why it's sneaking in.
I suppose for me, like, if I was going with heart, the only reason I put the Honey Boy low is that I think I love the way it looked and I do love the way it sounds, but it's not an amp that I would buy. Not into that sort of vibe of amplifier. In terms of like what it is for the market, and it goes to show that you can get a great product for not a lot of money. I think, you know, it should be.
How would everyone feel about the Bassbreaker 007 being fourth on this list? Because I think we all agree that the Katana is a good product, like possibly winning this category.
Yeah. I mean, I think...
You prefer the Bassbreaker to the DV.
I do prefer the Bassbreaker.
We both like the... DV.
I do prefer the Bassbreaker to the DV, but when it comes down to it, it's just a fraction of taste.
Yeah.
So whatever. Like I really am happy to concede that. I'm not gonna fight tooth and nail for it.
Said fourth.
I think Bassbreaker fourth is where we're at and DV third.
Okay.
Well then we just come down to the Honey Boy or the Boss Katana win our amplifier of the year.
Man, I mean, both of them are remarkable for the money.
Yeah.
I mean, the Katana 50 is 165 quid.
It is, that's true. That is,
and where Marshall Code are putting hundreds of preamps here, 100 presets, tons of, you know...
There's only five or something.
Four sounds on a Katana.
I really...
And an acoustic, and a dedicated acoustic one, but like four guitar sounds.
I really like the Katana. I really like the Katana, and as much as I don't... One, and I'm sure there's people screaming at home because we're like giving it to Boss again. Like, I just think it's a really, really great product for the money within its category. Like, you know, I have ardently defended the Blackstar ID Core range for the last couple years. And honestly, if I hadn't bought that ID Core, you know, 6 months ago, actually it wasn't even that long ago, I really wish that the Katana had been out at the time that I bought that because it is a much better, and I've barely touched that ID. Since playing the Katana, I've barely played that.
I think there's definite arguments for the Honey Boy to win. I think the fact that it feels like a really special product because, you know, it's customised for you, it's handmade for you, but as we've discussed, this isn't just about us. This is what we feel a little bit... Well, it is, this is about us. Screw y'all listeners.
Yeah.
But it's more about how we perceive what will be the most popular product.
Suppose,
like, what's
way,
the best product for the market? And I think the Katana 50 is a better product for the market than the Honey Boy 5. Now, both of these will go through to the final, so once we've, you know...
And we can have another discussion about it after lunch.
I think everyone should own a Honey Boy. Everyone could own a Honey Boy, whereas I'm not so sure about the
Katana.
I think the Katana's just for beginners. That's all.
I don't think it is. It's made a really accessible, affordable product for kids.
I think the clean sounds in there are clean enough that, and they're authentic enough that if you had a pedal board at home, I'm not so sure on it being a gigging amp. I think it's definitely a home amp.
Although
there's plenty of volume, I think what the extra volume actually allows is more clean headroom.
There's a certain way that the power amp responds, I think, with those sort of amps. And I think the thing is, if you took 100 people who listened to this podcast and plugged them into a Katana and a Honey Boy, I personally think more people would take the Katana just because of the versatility that you've got in terms of a more practical amp.
I'm not sure that's necessarily true.
This podcast has got a very specific...
It's supposed to be guitar nerds and nerdery, and that's why finish amp next to your custom shot.
But the nerdy tech that goes into a Katana, I think, takes... Because the Honey Boy is, at the end of the day, is a readily available circuit that's been tweaked with modern components to make a great sounding amplifier by a guy who makes it for a customised and affordable price, but it doesn't necessarily give you the most that you'd want from.
I look at it a different way to you, Joe, in that, like, you know, I think what you need to remember is, like, and this isn't me talking smack on you or anything, but, like, I spent a lot of time working on the shop floor, and you spend a lot of time looking at stuff on the internet, and I realise this sounds like a cuss. It's not at all. You spend a lot of time looking at stuff on the internet and talking about stuff with us, and talking about stuff on the internet, and you're talking about cool and new, exciting stuff. Whereas if you sell a kid their first amp, and they are like, if I was to sell a kid their first amp and it was a Boss Katana, they would walk out of that shop so excited about that. But you plug them into a Honey Boy, they'll be like, I can't play this at home. I think, like, the excitement of a Katana, of an amp that sounds that good at that price, I think means so much more than something cool that you can buy for the best part of a grand. That's for me why I chose it above the Honey Boy.
I would say that I think people listening to this podcast, everyone would find something to like about the Katana 50. I think with the Honey Boy, there's certain sections of guitar players who want a particular sound that the Honey Boy just will not do.
Fine.
And I think
the
drive sounds and the more kind of rock and roll stuff, the Honey Boy wins hands down over
completely,
a Katana, because
completely,
it is so authentic. It's, you know, point-to-point wiring, handmade, it's beautiful. But I think there is something in the Katana that everyone will like, which is why I think it should be our amp of the year.
Well, fair enough. I think the Honey Boy is the nerdier product of the two.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah.
And this is Guitar Nerds. But
bear in mind,
if we want to choose a beginner's amp for the amp of the year,
both of these things are going through to the final on Friday, so we can argue this out again then. It's going to be good fun.
Cool. So £160 bedroom amp wins best amp of the year. Welcome to Guitar Nerds.
So,
but, like, I really think you're, like, what is it that we are? Like, it ostensibly we're trying to I mean,
we are Devo.
But, like, what are we trying? What's the point of this podcast? Is it to just talk about the, you know, the smallest run, the nerdiest stuff that most people aren't going to buy?
This is getting existential.
Well, absolutely it is. Or are we?
This happens every year.
Yeah, it does. But, like I really feel like one of the things that I really like about Katanas is the fact that, like, we are able to help people make decisions on the right thing for them to buy. And how many times have you like seen on the forum or had tweets and stuff from people who said, oh yeah, I listened to a podcast, I was really into it, and I bought this thing that you said was really cool, and I bought it for my kid and they love it. Like, surely you get a pang of pride out of that. And I think being able to like put forward these suggestions, I think it's really important.
Yeah, no,
and it's, these are the nerds of the next generation.
Well,
you know,
I think what is brilliant about the Katana is that it actually sounds good.
Yeah.
And there are so few practice amps that do.
Yeah,
and
agreed.
To be able to do that and then undercut everything else on the market is completely remarkable. And yes, it is without a doubt, you know,
the best practice amp. And
the best practice amp
completely,
to come out this
completely
year.
Completely is. And I just think that the best practice amp to come out this year, just because it's a practice amp, like, doesn't discount what it is within its... I think it's a better practice amp than the Honey Boy is boutique amp.
I think that's a fair argument.
Yeah, I think so.
And bear in mind, they are both going through to the final. So
that's fine.
When things get a little bit more heated on Friday, we can really nail down on this. Shall we? So that was our top five amps of 2016. At five, the PV Piranha 6505. At four, the Fender Bassbreaker 007. At three, the DV Mark Gen 15. At two, the Honey Boy 5 Watt. And at one, the Boss Katana 50.
We nearly put the Blues Cube Hot in instead of the
Katana. I know, unbelievable. That would have ended very differently, I think. Anyway, let's have a couple minutes break and we will come back when we're doing 2016's best product of 2015.
Cool.
And we're back to continue day two's deliberations for Guitar of the Year.
Guitar Nerds. How long have we been podcasting
for? Three hours. The first episode was long.
We're not even halfway through.
No. Anyway, so this is 2016's best 2015 product.
Yes.
This is where we look back on last year's Gear of the Year, the things that got through to the final, and discuss, you know, did they last or not? So the products we're talking about are basically the top five from last year: the Gibson 2016 Les Paul Traditional, the Ranger FX Echo X Plus Igor, the TC Polytune Clip, the Orange OB-1 300, and the Boss ES-8.
So
we're just
going.
Just need to rank them.
Yeah.
We're not deleting anything off here.
Can I just put something out there? And this is an honest, like, this is a genuine question: is the OB-1 still a current product? I don't think, because I've just like Google shopped it and.
No, they're gone now,
Gag
aren't they?
Seems to be the only shop that actually is listing them. And I wondered, I was like, they can't have only been out for a year. And that's what I was wondering with the Orange Bass Gears.
Well,
like,
I mean, they...
What are they actually doing at the moment?
No, they 100% must still be doing them, because it was only a couple of months ago that Orange released an advert for
the OB-1
versus the Stroke,
but so weird. I've just, I've
400
not,
or whatever it's called.
I've not... seen them as much as I.
They are still listed as
they
a current product. Yeah.
Current product. That wasn't like a cuss.
It was
genuine. Like,
I think one of the things that's interesting with this is always my favorite part of Gear of the Year, because what we're doing is we're discussing whether what we chose last year was the right choice in hindsight, and I think that. I think it's very, very difficult for us to say...
We've never agreed with ourselves, have
we've
we?
Not, no. And I think it's very difficult for us to say anything...
I've just loaded up Gear of the Year 2015, so I can actually...
I think it's very difficult for us to do anything other than say the Boss ES-8 has absolutely exceeded all of our expectations.
Yeah, I think so.
In terms of its longevity. Not its longevity, but like... It's really stood that it's only been a year, but it's really stood the test of time.
I think so. In terms of things that you still see in everyday use, I would say that the things that are still definitely in everyday use, ESA 100%, TC Polytune Clip, I think still think is a real strong product.
Yeah.
The Ranger obviously was very niche anyway.
Yeah, very esoteric.
I'm not sure that can really qualify. Like,
I'm just looking here. So I'm just looking. Obviously, Gibson was the big thing last year. 26 Les Paul Traditional, which we voted over the Ernie Ball St. Vincent, which I still think is a
big mistake.
I don't think so.
I think that the 2016 Les Paul Traditional is probably a better or at least as good as the 2017 Les Pauls. I don't think, you know, I don't think that, and that's why it wasn't included. You know, I don't think that we needed to do it. I absolutely love the St. Vincent. I really do love the St. Vincent. I think it's an incredible guitar. I think it's an incredibly important guitar. Really important guitar. Maybe in hindsight, like,
I think it should have won.
I think it probably should have won.
Do we add St. Vincent to this list then?
No, we're not allowed to. We can't change the result.
Well, I mean, you know, it was in the top.
I believe we have done in the past.
This is more of a discussion, though, really, isn't it? Right. It's more about.
Oh, let's do it then.
I'm going to add the Ernie Ball St. Vincent to this list.
Yeah, but I think it's worth bringing into the discussion.
What's good is we've already spoken about it. If you're listening to this, because we'll have spoken about it already, but the 2017 Music Man catalog means that it will be back in.
Yes, actually,
in 2017.
Well, it's only a different colour, though.
No, it's not. No. Oh, there are some other things that we would have already spoken about.
Yeah, yeah. We'll talk about that when we actually talk about it. But so, is there something that we can lose from this list then to accommodate the St. Vincent?
Because, I mean, because last year we had best other thing and weirdest gear. Because best pet, I don't think in this 2016's best product, 2015, obviously, because it was only the top five, there was no pedal.
But
one thing we didn't, we counted out, but actually ended up being one of the biggest pedals of the year was the Montreal Assembly Count to Five.
It was. But again, I think it's too niche to really. And I think the same with the Ranger FX Echo X. Like, I love it.
I think the Ranger FX Igor Echo X, I think is a great pedal. A really, really great pedal. I don't think it isn't the first or second best. You know, it hasn't gone up or down necessarily, it's still as cool as it was this time last year.
Yeah.
Because it's still a weird pedal and a weird cheap pedal that you can get. I think it's great, but
nothing's come along to knock it off its mantle.
No.
And,
but like it's sat in a weird position.
Yeah.
What about Polytune Clip though? Because this was something that I sort of mentioned just before we started recording, is that obviously they were £30 when they came out.
Yeah, yeah.
They're £45 now.
Okay. It's a lot for a clip on tuner.
Is there something, looking back on it, would we necessarily say it's still a great product now because of its price?
Yeah, or are
we
just saying pounds is
a lot. It's a lot of money. What we actually need to do with this, because all we're doing is picking two, we don't necessarily need to put these into a category. So are there two clear products there that you think
need
to go through?
I think the Boss ESA and the Ernie Ball St. Vincent.
Yeah. I think so too.
I
Matt
think
Knight,
so as well.
Joe Brenton.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay.
See, one of the things that like I'm happy to concede, and I'm always happy to reflect. I'm always happy to look back and go, okay, I was wrong about this. Is I ardently argued that the Obi-Wan should have won last year.
I really
fought the corner for that. I really, really did. And there was a lot of fallout from it last year, and a lot of people saying like the ESA shouldn't have won because it's too niche. And actually, I really do think it's true now. I'm not sure if it was true this time last year, but I definitely think it's true now that actually I think the Obi-Wan was probably the more niche product out of those two. Mm. I think the ESA does have the wider appeal, but I think that's because the guitar world has changed even in the last year.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Really, really, really has. And like,
so
which is why we were able to put into the top five or close enough a £250 power supply.
Yeah.
Which we wouldn't, I don't even think last year we would have been able to
No, totally. Things have changed. So what are we going to award as 2016's best 2015 product?
I still think the ESA is the best product of last year.
Yes. Having bought one before, obviously, where we're at now, and having had it for so long, I don't think there's a product I've enjoyed having more than an ESH. Just for the amount
that's right.
Yeah. I think that's probably I think that's probably one of the most enjoyable. I've had more enjoyment messing around with that pedal on my pedal board, as the heart of my pedal board, than I have any other.
I think you're right. I think that's the first time when a winner has had the longevity.
Yeah.
I think it's right. So
I'm really glad that we've brought the Synthinson back.
Me too. 100%.
I think it's an important,
a really important product.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, the conversation around that with, you know, magazines like She Shreds and that kind of community, that are just an audience who would have felt really pushed out by the guitar community before. It's been a real key product in kind of like, you know, empowering that community. It's just a serious guitar, you know, and there's been a lot of good conversation around it this year. So.
Yeah, I like, just on that note, I really think anybody who is into guitar nerds in any shape or form, if you're listening to this and you aren't aware of She Shreds, I think it's the single most important guitar thing in the world at the moment. I think it's the most important.
Even
more important
than
Guitar Nerds.
Nothing's more important.
I think She Shreds is the most important publication going right now.
We've got matching tattoos.
I actually like Guitar Techniques.
Okay.
I think it's super important.
Okay, anyway, total guitar for me, actually.
With that, so that means the Boss ESA and Ernie Ball St. Vincent weirdly go through to 2016's Gear of the Year final. Now, if any previous years are to go by, they won't make the top five because it's just ridiculous that products are used for.
But I mean,
we ain't saying nothing.
Maybe they could. So they join the Gretsch Streamliner Double Cut, the Reverend Billy Corgan, the Honey Boy 5 Watt, Boss Katana 50, the Rockstock Bright Switch, and the Barefoot Buttons in Friday's final. So do stick with us, because tomorrow we are going to be covering Best Pedal, which I'm looking at the list now. There's a fair few to go through. I think we're going to have to approach that very differently. And we'll also be doing 2016's Weirdest Gear. Join us tomorrow for more deliberations.
Cheers, gang.
Bye.
Farewell.